Following in the footsteps of the World Conference of Science Journalists in 2009, over 100 delegates from around Britain came together at the Royal Society in London to discuss science journalism.
I'm Robin McKee, science editor of The Observer. In terms of what we look for in science stories from The Observer, we're looking for something that has human interest. It's about a person with a scientific problem, I think. Somebody battling a disease for which there might be a cure or for which there's not enough money being pumped into. That's the sort of feature angle that we like. We like humans in it because that's what people are interested in when they pick up a Sunday newspaper. And we also like controversy. Any kind of battle, any kind of raging debate, we love that. So that's a couple of major fields, I would say, kind of major broad approaches that I would say would be covered by The Observer. And opportunities, up until recently, I would have said there were few, but with the fact that we have a reduced staff and we have expanded news science news section, yes, I think there are opportunities.
Thank you very much indeed.
Okay, so my name's Graham Lawton. I'm the deputy editor of New Scientist magazine, and I've just come out of a session that I've been involved with called Creative Feature Writing, which was a kind of practical session, really, talking to people about how to structure features, the kinds of techniques that you can use to produce better science features. I talked about narrative, which is a word that gets bandied around an awful lot in newsrooms and feature editing sessions, but it has a very strict technical meaning. So I tried to explain to people exactly what a narrative is and how they can use it to organise their material, to think about a feature from the get-go. And in my experience, it's a really useful technique for turning material that you gather about science into compelling, interesting stories that people will start to read and want to finish. The one key point I would give to a writer when thinking about a feature story is to bear in mind that science is actually wonderful narrative material, because narratives are all about heroes and protagonists trying to reach their goal and the things that push them away from their goal and the actions they take to move them back towards it. People don't often think about narrative in terms of science. They think about it in terms of fiction and Hollywood movies and so on, but actually science is narrative gold. If you think about the fact that scientists are goal-driven people, you're not going to meet people who are as goal-driven as scientists. They desperately want to solve that problem. They absolutely want to win that Nobel Prize, and it drives them on. It makes them do extraordinary things, and that is the stuff that story is made of.
And finally, do you think scientists can make good writers?
I think scientists can make really good writers. I don't think everyone can be a good writer. You need a kind of natural aptitude for it, but it's something that people can learn. Stephen Jay Gould is one of my most favourite writers of all time. Clearly he was a scientist. I don't think just because you're a scientist it automatically means that you're going to be a good writer, but I would encourage all scientists to at least have a go.
I'm Nigel Hawkes. I'm the director of a pressure group called Straight Statistics, which campaigns against the misuse and misrepresentation of statistics. I was talking today about how journalists can use statistics to write better stories, and also about how statistics can be misused to confuse journalists and persuade them to write stories they shouldn't write.
How can statistics improve an article?
Statistics can improve an article just by giving you some hard facts. You know, statistics I heard described the other day as a stepping stones through the turbulent waters of public debate. They are a way of making sense out of rather inchoate data. And therefore, if you're writing about something like crime or drinking or whatever it may be, there are statistics that will tell you, is drinking going up? Is crime going up? Look at them, read them. You may find something interesting. It may change your mind, and at least you'll know that you're writing on a sound basis of evidence. Statistics can mislead if they're used in a misleading way, which they often are. For example, medical journals often present their results in a way that makes the benefits look greater than the risks. They will present the benefits as a relative risk, the risks or the disbenefits in an absolute scale. And it's very hard to know which is the greater when you're presented with a mismatched comparison of that sort. You've got to be alert, and you've also got to read the data and not just the abstract or the conclusions, because very often the data doesn't justify the conclusions that people reach. In more general life, outside medical journals, you know, you've got to be wary of politicians claiming that, let's say, violent crime has greatly increased, as David Cameron has done recently. The data we've got on this doesn't justify that. Crime, generally speaking, is declining for whatever reason. So really, you can use it as a honesty check for lots of people out there who make claims that may not be true.
Do you think the public understands statistics?
Do the public understand statistics? They kind of recognise they're important, but whether they understand them, there's a bit of a lack of trust, actually, in the way that statistics are presented. People are not as trusting as they ought to be, because actually the statistics are very honestly gathered and properly collected. Sometimes they're presented with a certain amount of spin, which I think makes people cynical. But do they understand them? They probably understand as much as they need to. I mean, it would be nice to have a more sophisticated understanding, but that's perhaps a bit unrealistic.
And what would be like the one key thing you would say to a journalist to make sure that they report statistics correctly?
I would say to a journalist, just be very careful. Don't write things down because everybody knows they're true. They may not be true. An awful lot of things that everybody believes to be true aren't true. Look behind the immediate claims or conclusions that are being made and look at the underlying data. It's often quite simple to do that. And you might come to a completely different conclusion.
My name's Christine Patch and I'm a genetic counsellor, so I see families who are at risk of inherited diseases or have a diagnosis of a rare syndrome or an inherited disease.
Okay, so what's the session you've just been speaking
about? It's the future genomics section, so it's been a session on direct-to-consumer testing predominantly.
Have you, in your counselling career, ever encountered anybody who's been through this genetic testing procedure?
Not who's bought a test over the internet and then come for their results to be interpreted, because we wouldn't see them, because I work for the NHS, so we see patients who are referred to us who have family history of serious conditions.
So how does finding out more about their genetic background, how do you see that affecting them as a whole person? Do you deal with these people just once or do you see them repeatedly?
It depends why they come and see us. We'll see there's many, many thousands of genetic diseases and there's many, many hundreds of very rare syndromes. So some patients will be coming to see a doctor for a diagnosis. Other people we'll be seeing to talk about, for example, their risk of cancer. And what we do will depend on assessing their family history. We may at that point just say they're at low or moderate increased risk and refer them back for screening, or we may organise genetic testing. If we find a genetic mistake, then we may be offering testing to the extended family. And if somebody's having testing for a gene that gives them a very high risk, they need a lot of information and thinking about it before they decide to have that test.
To me, it seems there's a bit of a tension between this very codified, tested, quantified information that's generalised over populations that we're hearing may be more or less representative. You seem to have a role in translating that into an individual's whole life experience. And are there gaps? Where does it work? Where does it fall apart?
This whole area is very complicated. And we have to separate out the families and individuals who have what you might call sort of old-fashioned genetic disorders. So they have disorders that are caused by one or two genes that give them a very high risk of something very serious. The majority of the population, where we're all at risk of something. All of us will have a risk for cardiovascular disease. All of us will have a risk for Alzheimer's. All of us will have a risk for generalised cancer not caused by the single genes. All of us will have a risk of diabetes. So at the end of the day, all of us have a risk of something.
What do you think's the most important message for people working with genetic testing information to communicate to people in general? I mean, you mentioned the complexity. What is it you think that probably needs to be understood better by everybody?
The very fundamental question is, what question am I trying to ask for myself? That's the most basic thing. For example, if you're saying, I want to know what I'm going to die of, none of these tests will answer that. If you're saying, my mother died of breast cancer when she was 50, am I going to get breast cancer? We might be able to say you're at higher or lower risk. If you're saying, my mother had Huntington's disease, am I going to get Huntington's disease? I can answer that with a genetic test. So the most important thing is for the person to know what they're asking.
Would you say there's an art of identifying and managing expectations?
There is, both at the level of the individual client or patient, but also at the level of the public and the scientists, I think, and the health service.
I'm fairly new as a journalist, but I've found today just invaluable for finding out how to be a better science writer. And hopefully everyone has got something useful from the conference today.